Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 137 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, great to see you as always.
Good to see you, Jason.
So we're in September. September, I feel like, is the month of the SEC. So the SEC and eToro just settled for $1.5 million, which doesn't seem like a lot of money, but it is officially settled. Now eToro is only selling or listing, whatever you want to call it, Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Bitcoin Cash. The other 71 cryptocurrencies that people could buy in the U.S. for eToro now have to be sold in the next 6 months. And what's crazy is this doesn't affect everybody outside the U.S. So if you're with eToro outside the U.S., you still have access to over 100 different cryptos. It's just the amazing SEC in the U.S. decides that U.S. customers are not smart enough to deal with these other cryptocurrencies.
But Coinbase is still selling a lot of those other cryptocurrencies, correct?
Correct.
So that makes sense, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, and this feels a lot like when the NCAA cracks down on a small school for an infraction and lets the big ones slide because there's just too much money coming in. So it's like, yeah, we have rules, we enforce rules, and then but there's definitely an elephant in the room here. It's funny to me that Bcash gets in. Like, yeah. If Bitcoin and Ethereum makes sense, like Bitcoin's straight up, like, you know, not a security. You know, we've got in on that path. Ethereum's been getting like that. The old Ethereum, the initial Ethereum was a security, but secondary markets is a commodity or property or whatever. Bcash, where the like a it's who's buying and selling anyway, and also why does it get a pass?
Well, I mean, I guess my thought is if it's a fork of Bitcoin, so if you're gonna say, hey, anything that's forked Bitcoin gets a free pass, then there's a handful of other cryptos out there that you could list as well.
Yeah, or if it's proof of work, then why Litecoin isn't on that list?
Yeah.
So go figure, man. The SEC doesn't make any sense. I saw where they accidentally put out some comments in the transcript of Gary Gensler's speech that basically said, I strongly recommend a sentence here to reassure markets that you aren't making a speech because you think there's an imminent crisis. Why would you have that comment in there unless there's talk of an imminent crisis coming? But yeah. Straight up, man, you know, hide comments, print the PDF, send out. Like, there's got to be some people that are able to do this and or read it before you post it to the internet. So SEC just whatever, man. Maybe something happens in this election. And my understanding is usually the chairman steps down after this election. His time's kind of coming up or whatever. So we don't have a ton of time left with this. This is not a good run.
Well, I think it's June of 26 is when his official term is over.
June of 26.
Yeah. But I mean, the other crazy part is the SEC's fiscal year ends in September of 24, the end of September, right? So this thing with eToro is just one of many. I think they've done 12 of these so far. Typically in September, on the last 5 years, the SEC has averaged 44 of these. So expect the next couple of weeks to be a little crazy. And part of this is, I think the SEC is asking for $2.6 billion for next fiscal year to help grow out the SEC to deal with the wild west of crypto. But what's interesting with all this is that there's some emails that have also come out between Gary Gensler and somebody else that he was hiring that was talking about they were hiring based on political preference. So if you're the right political party, then you're not going to be hired, which is illegal. So it's kind of a mess right now.
Yeah, you know, you don't get to be the Treasury Secretary if you aren't being political when you're in charge of the SEC. I the feeling that I get from the blue team is if you're not playing ball with their team, then you don't get to move up in the ranks. So there is no playing nice anymore. So whatever, man. Maybe these voting machines will hold out one more time and as the last island that is impenetrable by hacking, and we can have an actual election and see what happens.
We shall see. The other thing about the SEC that I also thought was interesting is we've been talking about SEC and Binance having a suit going on for, man, what is it, 2 years now already?
Yeah.
Whatever's going on. Well, the SEC just came out and changed the claim that they made in their suit. And their claim said that when they said crypto asset securities, it didn't really mean that tokens were actually securities, which is kind of weird. Because if you look at the XRP suit that they filed years ago, the first page says XRP is a crypto asset security. it's just kind of a mess at this point. And the SEC is just a dumpster fire, unfortunately.
Yeah, they're just not doing a good job.
Yeah.
It's been going on for a long time, and it doesn't seem to be getting better. So maybe over a long enough time period, the older people cycle out, younger people get in, and they have at least a half an understanding of what this stuff is. And even if they are politically biased, the younger you are, the more likely you are to have exposure to Bitcoin and crypto. So the more likely you are to be balanced. I mean, it's shocking, you know, like Gary Gensler, when he first got in, oh man, he taught MIT and he taught blockchain at MIT and he understands this and that. And da, 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 da. And he's been in Washington too long and he's just a politician now.
Yeah.
Like, it sucks.
Well, even the Magic Eden CEO came out. So we talked a few weeks ago that OpenSea got a Wells notice from the SEC, which OpenSea is an NFT marketplace. Magic Eden is actually bigger than them now, I think, at this point. And Magic Eden didn't get a Wells notice from the SEC. So it doesn't really make sense why they're picking and choosing certain companies versus others if they think NFTs are securities. So it's just, it is a mess completely. I mean, the other thing that they finally did, Prometheum, which is the first fully recognized crypto special purposes broker dealer, just opened their doors. And this is the broker dealer that kind of came in and said, oh, we believe what the SEC is saying, and we're going to try to follow to the law what they believe. And the SEC gave them this ability to sell crypto, and they want to be the PayPal of crypto. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens and if there's anything that comes out of it. The other interesting thing that I did see is there's another company, T0, that apparently just got approved with that same license. So I'm not sure what this means. I mean, there's a handful of parts that are now commodities that don't fall under the SEC. So we'll see where this goes in the next couple of months.
I mean, good luck trying to play ball with the SEC.
Give them enough money. I guess you can do anything you want.
Right, yeah. Well, speaking fees.
So the other thing that's kind of interesting that revolves around the SEC too, there was a guy from the House that has put up the Bridge Digital Assets Act. And Bridge is one of their acronyms, standing for Bridging Regulation and Innovation for Digital, Global, and Economic Digital Assets. So a little bit of a mouthful. Their proposal is a joint committee between the CFTC and the SEC to give advice on rules and regulation for digital assets, but it will really include 40 non-government stakeholders who represent different interests on digital assets, and they'll have a 2-year term, and the plan is to meet twice a year. So we'll see if that actually goes through. I guess we've got to wait for the next president at some point to make a decision on that.
And I suppose that's something. I don't trust people that create acronyms where the first word of the acronym is the acronym itself. Like, if it's Bridge and the first word is Bridge, I just don't know that you put enough thought into it. So I don't, right off the gate, I'm not liking it without getting past the first word.
Yeah, well, I mean, it sounds decent if something like that can actually happen. The question is, will that actually happen? And I mean, right now, I don't think Biden is going to do anything before he is gone.
I don't know that he's done anything since dropping out of the campaign. I feel like everybody just forgot that he's the president.
I think they did that a long time ago, unfortunately.
Yeah, you might be right.
The other, I guess, political news. So North Carolina got in the news, probably not in a good way. The North Carolina Senate had overturned a veto by their governor, Roy Cooper. He had vetoed House Bill 690, which pretty much bans payments to the state using CDBCs. And so this is kind of a big deal. It kind of gave North Carolina a way to show that they were going to stand united in no CDBCs in the U.S. And yet they had a Democratic governor that vetoed it. And then the Senate had to come back and say, okay, we're vetoing, we're overturning your vetoes. So we're not going to do CDBCs. So they got, I guess, some worry there in North Carolina to figure out what's going on with their house.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a strange thing that one team is pro CBDCs. Like, that doesn't seem like it does make sense that that's the team that typically is viewed as giving away money, and CBDCs would allow you to do that on that direct to customer path, similar to the stimulus checks, except for you don't have to wait for a check in the mail. So I do see how that connection makes sense if you're just trying to buy votes. But man, people are, you're going to have to give me a whole lot of money to give you to sign up for this kind of crap. I might be for sale, but it's not for what they're willing to pay.
Well, it would put you in kind of that same boat of where Russia is. So Russia is now requiring their largest banks to support a digital ruble by July of next year. Right. So if we want to follow in Russia's footsteps because they've done such a great job, then we should allow CDBCs.
Yep. If you want to be as free as Russia, let's do CBDC. And before we get off politics, I did watch the debate in its entirety. There was not a mention of Bitcoin, but they did talk about eating cats and pets. So I don't think we're very close to getting into the conversation in a debate.
We've got to be next.
I mean, we're after eating cats. So that's seems inappropriate. I don't know how many people are eating cats. I do know there's like tens to maybe 100 million Bitcoin exposed Americans at this point. And still not getting in there. Maybe next time.
it's crazy. The markets on prediction markets on who's going to win this election is almost at $1 billion of money that has been wagered in who's going to win just the U.S. election. It's kind of insane at this point.
Yeah. And it swings. Like, I'm watching that Polymarket stuff. It's funny because I used to see a lot of like pollster information from the Rasmussen poll and then this and then that. And then I bet I see Polymarket 40% of the time and 60% of like polling data, which it's pretty awesome. I do like, because like, I guess Polymarket could tip some scales if like at one point Elizabeth Warren wanted to shut them down because Joe Biden was at like a 40% chance of winning. And then I think Polymarket put money on Joe Biden to swing the numbers back to even. And then they never had that conversation again. And ever since Kamala's been in charge, I think it's been, you know, no worse than 45% chance of winning for either candidate. So it's been kind of neck and neck. So, but I just, that's really the only way you can make those numbers false, right? Polling data is kind of easy to to mess with, but if people are actually putting money down, you know, you can't just fabricate that.
Oh yeah. And if someone does try to, I think someone tried to throw the market in something else and invest a bunch of money, and somebody else came back in and said, oh, if you can do that, I'll
go over
that.
The top.
You're going to give me better odds. Yeah, I'm all in.
I do like that Polymarket exists. So that's, it gives me at least some data point that isn't just journalists trying to play with numbers.
We talked last week about how Bloomberg Terminal just added Polymarket to all their research, right? So now everybody that has Bloomberg is seeing the Polymarket data. And then, was it Kalinske or whatever, the other competitor to Polymarket that's US-based, they are now live and doing the selection betting as well. So, and I did see Standard Charter came out, and their guess, which I guess you can almost forecast, what do you want to call it, which is really a guess, is that they think Bitcoin will be at a new all-time high by the end of the year. If Harris wins, they think it's 75K. If Trump wins, they think it's 125K, but they said either way, it's going up from here. So I guess that's good news.
You know, like September to me, like we're halfway through September. I feel like it's a real turning point kind of time because, one, September is supposed to be a down month I don't think it's going to be a down month. I think we'll close higher. We've got a FOMC meeting, and if they don't lower the rates, then they're going to be slow to react again to lower the rates, like they were slow to react on raising the rates with transitory inflation and all these other stupid things they were saying at the time. And so I'm like, okay, lower the interest rates. There's so many people that are aware of October being a good month that I can't imagine people are waiting for it to go up before they start to trade into it. So I feel like front running the October push is a part of this. You also, you have institutional adoption kicking in a bigger way, right? We're still on the learning curve for institutional adoption. Bitwise just said that they talked to an RIA that's adding 6% of their portfolio into crypto ETFs, 4% Bitcoin and 2% Ethereum. And so, you know, these things are just keep happening. And so I'm on board with the new all-time high by the end of the year. I looked, you know, in January, I predicted 88 to 132K Bitcoin by the end of the year. I think I stick with that. That range is good. And we only got 3 months to get there. But yeah, I'm with them. I think Bitcoin goes up faster with a Trump presidency. I think it goes up slower with a Kamala presidency. But yeah, it's up either way. And I still feel good about the end of the year.
Yeah, even Elizabeth Warren came out and I think she wrote a letter to Congress or to the Fed asking them to cut rates by 75 basis points, which to me means we're in a lot worse shape than what everybody's saying.
Well, Elizabeth Warren things boom at just the right time. If you emergency cut rates by 75 basis points right now, and that is going to carry you all the way into the election. But yeah, I mean, she's so political, like this doesn't have to do with the economy, right? This only has to do with votes. And also the Fed is apolitical, right? So I don't know why senators would send written messages to the Fed because they're supposed to be independent, but they're, you know, nothing is independent of politics anymore. So that's just the way it is. And if they did 75 basis points, rich people would get so rich so quick. The asset inflation that you get from dropping the interest rate that fast, anybody that's holding anything of value, it all goes up. Bitcoin, in my opinion, is going to go up faster, but you drop the interest rates, you know, over a longer period of time, the housing prices go up. If you have a business that you're looking to sell, your multiplier just went up because the interest rates went down. And so, I mean, all the cap rates change. I mean, it's great for rich people. And Elizabeth Warren is supposed to be like Occupy Wall Street champion of the little guy. What a flip she's made in 8 years.
Speaking of flips, we talked last week about the UK and how we thought they were really pro crypto and they weren't really giving anybody licenses in the UK. Well, they now just announced that they're going to vote on crypto being a third kind of personal property. So right now there are two kinds, and it's things in possession, which is like gold, or things in action, which is, I think, debt and stuff like that, right? So it'll be interesting to see if they actually give digital assets this third version of personal property that actually has personal rights associated with it, which will be kind of good. And it theoretically should push them forward in terms of who's in the lead from a country perspective in the crypto space.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing to just have out there to make politicians start thinking of this as something different. My instinct would be that they would try to cram it into the old category along with gold. So for them to create a new category is actually pretty solid, in my opinion.
Yeah, so we'll see if it actually gets through. But it's exciting that they're actually talking about it, because I don't know of anybody else that's out there saying the same thing right now in any other country.
Yeah.
You heard of Project Agora yet, by the way?
I have not. I'm looking forward to it, though.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be an interesting one. So the Bank of International Settlements, the BIS, is now working with, I think, 40 or 41 companies and 7 central banks, UK, Japan, South Korea, Mexico, Switzerland, US, and Europe. And what they are working on doing is real-world assets and tokenizing those to help with cross-border payments. So it'll be interesting to see kind of what happens. You could probably name a couple of projects that have been working on this for a while, but so there's really no details on what they're going to do, but it's interesting that you have a bunch of central banks and theoretically the Bank of International Settlements that's saying, yeah, we need to tokenize all of this stuff to make it happen faster and quicker. So,
yeah, I don't know, man. I'm so skeptical about governments and central banks. If you really wanted cross-border payments, Strike's already there. Stablecoins are there. You know, just if central banks got behind some of these projects, then they would be adopted faster, right? Because everybody would feel safer that, okay, this is on the up and up. The government's not going to kill this thing. I'm not putting my value in something that's going to disappear because of government intervention. So why would a government, you know what, we can do better than the free market and create our own thing. And I'm not sure about the real world tokenization of assets and how that works. I need to do some research on it just to figure out what's the scope of this project, right? I mean, they're trying to just do payments, or are they trying to do property pay, like net worth kind of things? Or no.
So, I mean, there's not a ton of details, of course, because it's literally just starting. I think the exciting part is that they're getting together to talk about it and that they see blockchain and tokenization as the future and something they need to do. That doesn't mean that they're not going to use an existing platform that's out there. They haven't really said what they're going to use. So, I mean, could they use the Bitcoin network? Yes, they could. Could they use the Ethereum network? Yes, they could. I think the big thing they're trying to do is to tokenize. It sounds like some of the debts or some sort of securities between all the different banks so that they can close quicker instead of having to take the 3 or 7 days, whatever it takes now, to send money in between countries. So if you can do it on a blockchain in seconds, then that should be a huge boon to the economy because you're increasing the velocity of money in general. So we'll see what really comes out of it. I mean, I agree with you. It's a bunch of governments or government institutions type thing getting together and trying to talk. And I mean, this means it's probably 7 years out before anything happens, but at least they're finally seeing that tokenization and blockchain is the future and they can't really fight it.
Yeah. And it will take a lot longer. And if they use an existing blockchain or a project that's already underway, they don't get to pay someone that they're friends with a whole bunch of taxpayer money in order to create a new one from scratch that's not as good. So my instinct is that they'll do their own thing. It will cost a crazy amount of money and the product will be way behind what's already out there.
Yeah, you're probably not wrong there, unfortunately.
It's pretty consistent, I mean, with the government, man.
I mean, the only maybe, I mean, what JP Morgan did, I think, what did they fork Ethereum, and then they're doing their own thing internally with the JP coin or whatever. So maybe they just take an existing project and fork it and make it private. Although there's a handful of companies out there that are allowing you to create a private blockchain inside of there, like Avalanche and things like that. So we'll see. I mean, I'm not super optimistic that this is going to happen anytime soon or that they're going to make the right decision, but I am excited that they're seeing that this is what's needed moving forward. And hopefully they put some of the right people in those spots to make the right decisions, and maybe something good will happen out of this.
Yeah, I do like that it's being talked about because it's kind of shifting that Overton window so that it's in discussion of like, hey, this makes a lot of sense to stop using week-long settlement rails in order to send payments across borders. Oh, by the way, it's costing $50 to $100 to send money. Like this is pretty dumb. It's 2024. It's almost 2025. Like it's time to modernize some of the payment rails.
Yep. So another thing that I saw that I thought was actually pretty interesting, because I feel like, I don't know if there's another government out there that could say this, El Salvador just announced that their 25 government budget is going to have no planned deficit. So, which I don't know if there's been a country out there that has been able to say this in a very long time. Last year, or in 24, this year, I guess, theoretically, El Salvador had $330 million in planned deficit. And then if you compare to the kind of the end of his first term in 2019, they had a $1.2 billion planned deficit. So whatever they're doing is apparently working. And hopefully this is going to open up a lot of other countries' eyes to jump on the bandwagon and try to follow in their footsteps and see what they're doing and how it can be replicated in other countries as well.
Yeah, that's not an insignificant thing. You know, these developing countries are in so much trouble financially all the time that they're constantly borrowing and indebting themselves and things like that. So to have a year where you're not further indebting yourself is pretty impressive, especially, I mean, I still feel like El Salvador hasn't been into Bitcoin that long. So you got to pay attention, man. At some point, some of this kind of pride in your country stuff will kick in for these politicians, and they're going to jump on a similar train to clean their country up. And so I think what he's doing is overall good. I could do without some of the dictatorship kind of feel that he puts out there. But, you know, I don't know that you're going to, I think you need a guy that takes the lead and pulls back on the stick when you're in your country's in a nosedive. I don't think that you can pull 200 passengers on what we should do in order to get out of this nosedive and then have a second vote and then a preliminary discussion and a filibuster while your plane's crashing. So, you know, pick a pilot. If the plane crashes, it crashes at about the same speed as it does if you don't pick a pilot. And maybe this guy's able to do this. I mean, what is it? He has like 3 or 4 years left before his second term's up. So that's enough time based on the speed at which he gets stuff done, which is crazy fast for a politician. It's enough time for him to make a real big difference. And I think it's also enough time for other countries to start to accept these things as they're going on. I mean, they've been fighting him for a while, but I really haven't heard that very much lately where they're kind of down on him. I mean, for his inauguration, the United States sent a delegate. So I think we're getting closer. It's good to see. But again, for something like El Salvador and Bukele, like you have to be successful, right? It's the same with MicroStrategy. If you fail, you set Bitcoin back dramatically. And yep. The same thing for Bukele. If he does 10 things wrong and one thing, or 10 things right and one thing wrong, and the one thing wrong turns out to be a big deal, you know, he sets all of those other good actions behind. It's kind of fun because, you know, it's a small country. It's not, if things don't go well, then they're back to where they were. I mean, it's not like, the good thing about a country like that is that their backs are against the wall. It's not like they're going to dramatically screw things up worse. And so give me more of it. I went to El Salvador for a reason. It seems like good behavior, and I want to reward that with some travel money, pump it into their economy. So I talk about it pretty often, how cool it was to be able to spend Bitcoin like it felt like money. And I don't want to sell Bitcoin to get US dollars. I will gladly give you Bitcoin in exchange for goods and services. It's a different, they're very different, man. I think people should go down there if you're into Bitcoin.
Definitely on the list, that's for sure. So another thing that I saw, and this is kind of becoming a theme that we don't really want to continue seeing, InnoDAX, which is a Indian crypto exchange, was hacked recently for $22 million in tokens. They have since halted their platform to figure out what's going on. Friendly reminder, get your money off exchanges and put in a cold wallet. If you don't have one, learn how to do that soon. So that's majority of where everybody loses their money is because they have it in exchanges that get hacked. And I feel like we talk about a new one every week or a couple of weeks at this point. Like it hasn't slowed down.
Yeah. I understand if you're just getting into it, you're dabbling and you're like, okay, I want to have more than zero, you know, and it's not a lot, especially not to justify the purchase of a hardware wallet of, you know, $100, $150 or whatever. But man, if you have substantial full percentage of your net worth on an exchange, I think you're short-sighted. I think you got too much trust. Just the stuff disappears, man.
I know we talked a lot about Bitcoin mining and kind of some of the benefits that it has for the energy industry in general. Well, Norway has a lot of renewable energy, and they were in a small town up in Norway. They were using a Bitcoin miner to help with the cost. Well, the county or city, whatever it is, decided not to renew the license for that miner. they blamed it on the noise because they had a bunch of fans, I think, cooling the facility instead of it being liquid cooled. And they got super excited that they didn't renew it and they were getting rid of this miner. Well, all of a sudden, the prices for their energy jumped 20%. So it was definitely helping out the city. And yes, maybe the noise was kind of a problem, but there's probably other ways to solve that other than say, okay, we'll just pay more.
Yeah, you can easily solve the noise problem much easier than you can find another consumer that can be shut off in an instant. Solve the easy problem. Keep the hard solution in place. But yeah. Government, not impressed with governments. If I had to guess, I read an article about it and this and that. If I had to guess, someone who made the decision to just not renew that license was either living near or had a relative close to the mining facility, because this doesn't look like they did an investigation or they were like, okay, well, what happens if we do this? They're like, yep, nope, noise, click. Seems like an emotional decision and not a calculated, reasonable decision. And so just put it on the list as to why it's nice to have a brother-in-law that is in like city council or whatever. Like, oh, well, I don't have to listen to noise anymore. And I'm not somebody who struggles to pay the power bill.
So we've talked about stable coins a lot in the past too. Circle made some big news that they are moving their headquarters from Boston, where they've been since 2013, to New York City, because New York is where Wall Street is and becoming kind of one of the centers for digital asset companies as well. So they're staking their flag there and they're excited. I don't know if the people in Boston are excited because it's taken a lot out of there, but that is kind of big news. Circle is still one of those. I mean, it's their competitor to Tether, right? And one of the guys who kind of pays attention to all the hacks and tracks all the money is not a fan of Circle because he pretty much tells them that anytime someone gets hacked and Circle knows about it, Circle doesn't do anything about it. They make too much money by letting it all happen. Whereas Tether will lock down certain addresses and things like that, which has another issue there too, right? But yeah, he's not a Circle fan at all.
Yeah, I mean, Circle seems to like play a corporate game and be more friendly in some ways. And they seem to get a lot of publicity. Tether seems like the obvious choice here, but Circle doesn't go away. So maybe I don't know. I get the feeling that they're playing higher level games. And so stuff like this to me is, it probably makes sense for Circle and it'll probably work out in their favor. I think eventually Tether and Circle are going to have to figure out who's going to be the one, because I if you're talking about money and the network effect, and I'm trying to, you know, I want to send a cross-border payment. You want one rail to send everything on and one token. You don't want to like, oh man, I got Circle. I got to change my Circle into Tether, get a Tether to you. And you know, oh, and now I want to buy oranges at the market and they take Circle and I have Tether. Like it sucks. So, you know, I think they'll collide and something's going to have to give, but we'll see. I could be wrong on that.
I mean, my hope is that that doesn't happen and that we always have an option, right? If we get to a monopoly where just one guy controls it all, then there's no innovation happening there and no other place to go if something happens, right? So what they're both doing, it sounds like, is trying to get their stablecoin on multiple different rails. So whether it's Ethereum or Solana or something else, right? As long as they're all accessible, you can deal, if you can accept any of them, then you should be okay. And it's kind of like Visa and MasterCard, in my opinion. As long as you accept both Visa and MasterCard, then you should be okay. And you can have both Visa and MasterCard exist.
Yeah. And if somebody came up with an app that with interoperability, you could just look at your app and say, you know, $125 in there. You don't even need to know what percentage of that's Tether, what percentage of that is Circle. And if you go to spend it, then the app figures out which ones to spend and what to convert. And yeah, you could do it so people could adopt stable coins and not even have to think about Tether versus Circle versus anything else. So yeah, there's probably a technical solution to this before there's a giant difficult, you know, monolith emerging over, you know, out of all these different stable coins. So I think you're probably right. There's probably a better way to do it other than just having one champion.
And speaking of kind of stable coins, and this is a little bit off from the stable coins, but Coinbase is just launched their CBBTC on Base. So it is not a stable coin, but they're putting Bitcoin onto their layer two on Ethereum, the Base network. So that's kind of a big deal. And it's kind of interesting because it now gives the ability for Bitcoin to be used across the Ethereum network. I mean, there have been other people that have done it before, but if you looked at what most people had used before with Wrapped BTC, that seems to be kind of going in the other direction. So Coinbase is one of those companies that everybody trusts right now, and for good reason. I mean, I think they can be trusted as far as you can throw them with any company that's holding your money, right? But it's exciting to see, and we'll see what happens. I think they had a ton of money go on it, onto it as soon as they launched it, like $20 million almost in the first day. So we'll see where it goes from here.
Yeah, I haven't looked at too much about that. I mean, I feel like Ethereum is on, it's not on life support, but Ethereum's struggling. If you look at the price, I mean, there's still a lot of action on there, but it seems like it's losing some favor in the broader like crypto opinion. So these things kind of make sense to help kind of bolster that. I feel like there's a better way to move Bitcoin around without just doing a sidebar Bitcoin on Ethereum. But the fact that Coinbase to me is like really putting themselves in a position to be trusted between this and Brian Armstrong just released an announcement in regard to the transparency or lack of transparency for the ETFs, because there's a lot of stuff going on around Twitter about Coinbase being the honeypot because they are holding so much Bitcoin for these ETFs. And they said, like, basically, we're not gonna publish the wallets. You just essentially have to trust that we have it. We're a public company. We're under guidelines. They're ETFs. You know, we're playing by all these regulations and rules, and we're not rehypothecating, and we're not doing all these things that traditional finance people do. You just have to trust us. Then the ETF guys from Bloomberg were like, "Yeah, this is just the way it's going to work. You have to trust them. It's just the way it is." I'm like, man, the government can't just bail them out if they screw up. Like, you can trust Wells Fargo because the government's going to bail them out if they screw up. But the government's not going to bail out Coinbase. So you can trust them, but I wouldn't completely trust them. Like, I would trust them enough to buy Bitcoin and move it and that they have my Bitcoin. I wouldn't trust them enough to hold onto my Bitcoin for multiple years. That's you know, there's a risk that's associated with the amount of time that you leave stuff on there. And so to me, you know, keep manage your risk, right? But man, this you just have to trust me stuff is strange to me.
Well, I mean, that's why I like Bitwise. I think they're the only ETF guy out there that posts the public wallet address so you can see what's going on. So if you want to put it somewhere where you can see and make sure there's assets there, then Bitwise is the way to go. If you believe that Coinbase or any other guys are trustworthy enough, then put it there. That's fine too.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that they've talked about is they don't want people dusting the accounts, the ETF accounts. And Bitwise already said, "Oh yeah, we're going to just, this is just going to go to the ETF holders. Thanks for the donation," kind of thing. So their excuse for not exposing any of the Bitcoin addresses is pretty thin. So we'll see what happens if there is a problem with Coinbase and the Bitcoin that's held for the ETFs. It would be a monstrous disaster.
Yeah. That is true. So you mentioned Ethereum is struggling versus Bitcoin. I did see something that was kind of interesting. From the amount of tokens held on exchanges, Bitcoin is almost near an all-time low. About 15% of the total available supply is on exchanges, which is super low, right? Ethereum has even less than that. So they're about 10% of their supply that's held on exchanges. So theoretically, that means that if there is a demand for any of this, then that's going to move the price much faster. We'll see what really happens with that. But it was some positive news from the Ethereum community that a lot of Ethereum is staked or being used in other ways, and not much of it is on the exchanges right now.
Yeah, I mean, if we do see your typical crypto cycle where Bitcoin makes a run here, and then after things settle with Bitcoin, then money falls into the altcoin space, I would anticipate Ethereum and Solana really taking off. Just like Ethereum, because of the staking, you know, people are conditioned to hold Ethereum these days, where I don't know that was the case 4 or 5 years ago. So yes, we'll see. I haven't sold any Ethereum or Solana. I'm buying more Bitcoin, you know, so we'll see where it goes.
So speaking of buying more Bitcoin, MicroStrategy just bought some more Bitcoin, another, 1.1 billion. I think it's about 18.3 thousand Bitcoin. They paid just over $60,000 per Bitcoin. The way they funded it, they sold 8 million of their shares to a bunch of financial institutions, kind of under the radar, almost, is the way that I understand it. But I mean, just kind of what you talked about, if MicroStrategy screws this up, then everybody's going to say, I told you so, but they just keep buying, right? I mean, 60K plus per Bitcoin is, everybody's like, I'm waiting for it to come down, and they just buy another billion.
I mean, waiting for it to come down in September after a halving is a risky,
yeah.
History doesn't have to repeat itself, but that's a risky move. I mean, September, I without looking at a chart, September of 2020, you know, we were under 10,000, right? And we haven't been back there since. And I can't imagine we get there again. So, you know, it's not necessarily the last chance you get, but man, you know, MicroStrategy's cost basis is now 39,000. That's right there at the 200 week moving average, which is a very safe floor for Bitcoin price. So yeah, man, one of the reasons why I'm buying Bitcoin right now is my cost basis is below the 200 week moving average. So if my cost basis is below MicroStrategy's cost basis, I feel like I have room to buy some Bitcoin and still be among good company. So yeah, I had that in my notes as well. 18,300 more Bitcoin for MicroStrategy. Another note. So stockholders are getting more Bitcoin for their per share, and I believe they're using some funds from, I think there was almost a $2 billion raise, and they're refinancing. So they have of all their debt, most of it is corporate bonds that are payable by shares, except for one note that's more like a conventional loan that they're making payments on. I think they're using some of the cash to wipe that one out, because it's at 5% interest or something, and the rest are under one, or maybe one of them's like 2% interest, but they've got, they're basically refinancing, buying more Bitcoin, still getting more leverage. And man, if he's right, then he's going to be so freaking right.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's exciting to see. I'm glad I own some MicroStrategy stock now.
Yeah.
We'll see what happens. So speaking of somebody that was not right, SBF was in the news here recently. He's appealing his 25-year fraud conviction. He's 6 months into his 25 years so far, and he is blaming it on the judge being too harsh to him, so he wants a new judge. I'm not sure what's going to change, but I don't think anybody out there believes that anybody was too harsh on him.
No, he's just too soft.
Yeah. You know what? So yesterday, speaking of crazy things happening, World Liberty Financial was supposed to launch. I haven't seen much details on that. That was Donald Trump's son's creating a project that was going to revolutionize the banking industry. So it officially was supposed to happen yesterday, but we'll, I guess, try to see what happens over the next couple of days if that actually turns into something.
I did not do a lot of research into that. I did see that, if I remember the numbers right, 70% of the tokens will be held by the founders, 30% will be exposed to the market. So that's a crazy way to use other people's money as your exit liquidity. And so I'm not all about this one. This seems super scammy. Also, I don't know, you know, there's so many people's names that are involved in these crypto projects that I can't keep them straight, but I want to say one of the, because they brought in some crypto people that are like, well, you know, this is basically like the Trump brand on top of an existing crypto kind of thing. And I want to say one of the guys involved was just, it was in busted, part of a super scammy altcoin. This screams, don't touch it. Just watch other people lose their money and tell your parents not to do it.
The concept sounds great, but the way that it's being implemented is very sketchy. So it's kind of like, oh yeah, if this would have happened 5 years ago, everybody would have jumped all in. Mm-hmm. But now that they've been burnt from this over and over and over again, you would think that this wouldn't happen. It's just maybe they're taking advantage of their dad being on such a big stage and saying, oh yeah, this is the first time it's ever been done, when that's not the case.
Yeah. When you've got the reach that Trump has, you know, there's so many people that are pro Trump, or at least kind of pay attention to him, that don't pay attention to crypto, that this, you know, you could suck in a whole bunch of new people's money and they could lose it just like other people did 8 years ago. And then it will be the first time for them. So, and they're not going to do their research and they're not going to listen to a podcast. They're just, you know, they're going to buy, if it's a Trump gold coin that's sold on commercials during Fox News commercial breaks, they'll buy that. If it's, you know, send an email to this, if it's a Trump NFT, they'll buy that. So, you know, not great.
Yeah, some people don't believe that Trump can do any wrong, which is kind of crazy. So
yeah,
if you're a politician, don't believe anything they say.
Right. Just buy Bitcoin.
So another kind of exciting piece that I saw was PayPal and Venmo just announced that they're going to support the ENS usernames. So ENS is the Ethereum naming service, or whatever this stands for. But it's kind of a cool thing to where most people are used to sending or having a username or an email address. This is kind of taking your crypto addresses and turning it into an easy username. So that's exciting. That would make me sending money to you over the Ethereum network a lot easier, rather than typing in this crazy digit thing in there versus just saying how .ENS or whatever it's going to be, right? So it's exciting to see. I think it's US only for now, so it's still going to be a little bit of time before they test it all out and trial it everybody else, but that's definitely, pay attention to that.
Yeah, I think that the .ETH makes this a whole lot easier. With Venmo and PayPal and stuff like that, just shooting the QR code or here's my handle, and then the money pops up. That's great. It's still PayPal, funny money, you know, takes days to settle, all of that. If you can get, we talk about it all the time. If you can get it easier for people to transfer money and use Ethereum, Bitcoin, whatever, if you can make it feel like Venmo, people are going to adopt it super quickly. You know, it doesn't matter what goes on in the background. Like, we're already through all the people that are curious enough to do the research and start to understand all the crazy stuff, and the people that'll sit down at a computer and hold up a newspaper and go through the weird KYC stuff. Like, we already chewed up all those people, you know? So you got to make it easier to get the next layer of folks. And then that next cohort may have more money than the people that are in it already. So, you know, it is important for adoption, and you know, price and adoption are correlated. So I think you have to do things like this, and making it easier and just doing .eth addresses is a huge way to do that. So yeah, give me that. I'm all for it.
We talked about mining before too. CleanSpark just made an announcement that they're acquiring 7 more mining locations. I think they're all in Tennessee too. For about $27.5 million, it's going to give them another 5 exahashes per second of computing or hash rate. So that's kind of a big deal. I think between that and the Wyoming thing they had, they're going to be up to, what, 37 exahashes or something like that. So they're growing quite a bit, right? It's impressive.
Yeah, like I'm a CleanSpark shareholder, and they are not afraid to make some moves. Like, if this price goes up, they're going to be in a great spot. I actually, like, over the last few months, I've been doing like a covered call play to just generate some cash off of the stock I hold for CleanSpark. Not a lot, just to kind of play with it, but I'm not doing it now. It's like, man, like, if the price goes up, you know, I don't want to get I don't want my covered calls to auto sell, and I lose some of that topside. So I'm very bullish about CleanSpark. They seem to, they brought in some people that have been in Bitcoin for quite a while to help out. And so They seem to be playing the fiat game pretty well, where they get loans and buy stuff that makes them money in Bitcoin. And so I might spend dollars, mine Bitcoin, wait is a pretty good strategy.
So I'm not sure if you heard about the Web3 Sky event that happened here last week.
Nope.
So there's a crypto party that a bunch of people decided to throw on Qatar Airways on a 10-hour flight from one place to another. And I think they kind of rug pulled Qatar and didn't really tell them what was really going to happen. So it's probably the first one and the last one now. People were out of their seats dancing. It sounded like there was people were smoking weed on the plane. It was just a complete disaster from an airline safety perspective, right? But apparently it was an amazing Web3 Sky event. The who's who of Web3 was there, and you could hang out with them for 10 hours on a plane and talk.
Well, we can't have nice things.
Exactly. So the other thing that was really interesting, I know I've talked a lot about NFTs. CryptoPunks are probably one of the original NFTs. There was a punk, I think 2286, that was listed on a fractional shares website and split up into 10,000 different shares. So you could own just a piece of it. And that website kind of went under, right? So because it was a smart contract, there was a guy that figured out how to make an offer for all the shares. And he made an offer at 0.01 ETH per share. And the other person that thought they saw that tried to block it and didn't actually block it. So the sale actually went through. He ended up acquiring that punk for 10 ETH, which is about $23,000. Immediately after he got it, he got an offer for 600 ETH, which is about 1.5 million. So it's pretty much kind of the steal of the century from an NFT perspective. And one of the reasons why you got to be careful about, I guess, fractionalizing your assets and keeping them on hardware wallets where no one can access them.
Yeah. These crypto dudes, they like computer crypto dudes, love looking for stuff like that. Like if you give them an inch, they slide in there and steal your stuff. You know, yeah. If you make it accessible, if you mess up, they're going to expose you. And then what's their reward? Like $1.05 million from flipping a JPEG in a minute.
Yeah, almost 1.5 at least. I mean, 1.5 minus 23,000, right? So it's probably going to be more at this point if this is the bear market and things are worth nothing at this point, right? So kind of wild. But that's all I had on my end. Anything else I missed that you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, I did a bad job of sliding in a couple things that had spots earlier in the show that I could have if I was better at segues. I did not mention when we talked about the Bitcoin ETFs that 15 of the top 25 hedge funds now have exposure to the Bitcoin ETFs. So 15 out of 25, that's good. That means 10 are still not in and 10 will be in, right? Maybe one will be like the Vanguard and not jump in it. So when my bullish thesis is, you know, we're something like just over halfway of just getting exposure. Some of those top 15 have like 20 Bitcoin, 100 Bitcoin. You know, yeah. This is, you know, it's not like they are fully exposed to the way that they're going to be. I mean, these are these are rookie numbers, right? They're going to pump these up. So these, you know, for my bull thesis, once that door's cracked, you know how it is, man. Like it happens to people, it happens to MicroStrategy, it happens to countries, it happens to everything. You get a little bit, you see it go up, you get more. Like for these guys, these hedge fund guys, they're going to have investors calling them and saying, why are we at 0.01%? Why bother? Like, let's get to one or let's get out of it. Like this, it's not moving the needle. So I think you'll see that. I think that money I think that there's a trickle of money flowing in from that angle. I think that there's a lot more money behind it. And speaking of bad transitions, we talked about Norway. We talked about El Salvador. We did not talk about Bhutan. So Samson Mao is out there trying to talk to sovereign nations about getting Bitcoin on their balance sheets. He's all over the place. And he's the guy that keeps saying 1 million Bitcoin is possible by tomorrow. And he says some things that are fairly crazy. And if I was a serious government official, I don't know that I would listen to him. But he did release, and it's been verified, like Bhutan has over 13,000 Bitcoin. Pretty impressive. Yeah, it's a small country, man, 775,000 people. It's a, like a Buddhist country. It's super chill. They measure their country's prosperity not in GDP, but in gross national happiness. So they're like the only carbon neutral country in the world. They have laws against the use of plastics. There was no revolution to bring in democracy and overturn a monarchy. The monarch was like, yeah, but I think democracy is a better idea. There you go. And handed over the reins to the people. So like, cool country. 13,000 Bitcoin's a lot.
2.5 times what El Salvador has, right?
Exactly. It's almost 800 million in today's dollars. And El Salvador is right around 400. So you're talking about Bhutan, who I just told people more about Bhutan than they've ever heard. And they've got more Bitcoin than El Salvador. And like, they're not a Middle East oil country that's just, you know, got all these reasons to get into Bitcoin. They're, you know, so if they're in, there's other people that are in, you know, they're not a huge country. They're, you know, they seem cool. I like it, but like 13,000 Bitcoin is not a small amount of Bitcoin. Like even for a country, I mean, they have 775,000 people in the country. The state of Georgia has got more than 10 times that. That's a lot of Bitcoin, man. So I like that other countries are jumping in. I mean, it's like the slow chipping away at this stuff. And man, what was it, 2022, when you and I were like, the over under is 5 countries to adopt Bitcoin and to get into Bitcoin and da, 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 da. And we like, nobody jumped in. It was zero, the under hit. So, you know, things like this are exciting to me, because if it was 50 Bitcoin or something, it wouldn't be a big deal. Funny story, they had their Ethereum holdings. They had a fraction of one Ethereum, and they had like $35 worth of Ethereum to go with their 13,000 Bitcoin. So they're pretty much like Bitcoin maximalists over there in Bhutan. So yeah, I thought that was a cool one, you know, to have a country in that position that we haven't really heard of. Definitely, I haven't heard of it in the Bitcoin realm, you know, and how they're tied to Bitcoin. So the more countries that do this, the more countries that will do this, the more hedge funds that jump in, the more hedge funds will jump in, and the deeper they'll go. So wrap it all up. Hal is bullish about Bitcoin.
So I guess that goes back to our 2022 over-under. We might have hit the over.
We just didn't know.
None of the countries were saying anything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would imagine that if you've amassed 13,000 Bitcoin and you have 775,000 people in your country, that you've been doing this for quite a while.
Yeah, you did not do that overnight.
No. You don't have $800 million to throw around. That's $1 million per citizen in your country. So I would imagine that they've been in it for a long, long time.
Well, I mean, we talked about what, in February, there was somebody buying 100 Bitcoin a day.
Yeah.
And then no one knew it was. So, I mean, even if you were doing that, you still don't get 13,000 anytime soon. I mean, that still takes a lot of days if you're buying 100 Bitcoin a day, right? So,
yeah. That's 4 months of buying 100 Bitcoin a day every day. And 100 Bitcoin, I mean, again, you're also spending $600-700 million over the course of a few months. If you're that small of a country, you don't have that kind of cash.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you could be converting gold or something else, I suppose. But for I don't know how they acquired it. I don't know if they're mining, if they've got hydro or what. But, I mean, it's going to be tough for countries to catch up to that, you know? If Bitcoin runs, you know, Bhutan puts itself in a great position.
Yeah, and Samson Mao's prediction, I mean, I know he says tomorrow a lot of times in some places, but I think he's really been saying end of 2025, million dollars per Bitcoin end of 2025, which would be great, but it's also going to cause problems if it does do that too. So
yeah, the only way that happens, and it's not a total just collapse of financial markets, is if tons of money are flowing in and it's strictly a scarcity run. It's scarcity run plus a short squeeze plus, where it's really just the top end people that are going in. But I mean, you're going to be finding that money somewhere, you know, whether you're selling real estate or selling stocks or something. There's not that much cash on the table. Now, I did see that almost 40% of all households don't carry a mortgage anymore. How many of those people, if they're held by retirees, then yeah, they're locked in. They're not going to refinance. But if it's an inherited property, how many of those people were willing to refinance that at if interest rates go back down to 3 or 4%, refinance, you know, mom's old house and buy a bunch of Bitcoin with it and then pay off the Bitcoin over the next 15 years? Yeah, there's going to be a significant number of people that are willing to do that, because you know, if you could pay off Bitcoin at 3% over 30 years,
yeah,
like that's kind of how Bitcoin needs to be used, is over 15 year, 30 year time frame. So if you're paying a tax deductible interest too.
Yeah, exactly. Give me a 50 year mortgage on it, whatever the long one is they're offering.
Yeah. Put it in a trust, like 100 years. Let's let it roll. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, cool. Well, that's a lot that we've gone over. So we'll cut it off here. And yeah, we'll talk again next week.
Sounds good, man.
See you.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.